The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. Lots of love for the new Trumpet Daily coffee mug right here at the edge of the desk. A few people asking on Facebook yesterday if they could get a mug themselves. So Sam and Parker and whoever's back at headquarters will have to work on developing t-shirts, mugs, banners, hats. There we go. We can figure that out at some point. Maybe that'll happen. It's obviously not a super high priority. Coming up on today's show, the second half, we're going to be running the forthcoming video that will be playing this weekend here in the UK, Brace for Change in Europe. It does review some of the content that we've had in recent weeks on the leadership crisis in Germany, but it does bring you right up to date with the very latest. We just recorded this on Friday, so that's been edited and it's ready to go. And as I say, we'll play that for the second half, the second half of today's program. Well, for the royal family here in the UK, it's just going from bad to worse. Yet another royal divorce. Last week, it was the Queen's grandson, and today. Today, it's the Queen's nephew, the Earl of Snowdown. That's the son of Princess Margaret, the Queen's sister. And he and his wife put out a statement just yesterday evening, saying the Earl and Countess of Snowdon have it had a W in the name previously, so Snowdon's probably how you pronounce it. Excuse my ignorance of everyone in the royal family here. In any event, more bad news for the Queen and for the family. The statement said that they had amicably agreed to end their marriage after 25 years. You see a picture of them there on the YouTube stream. There's a report from The Sun, which talked about the divorce last week. This isn't the most recent update, but in the midst of this video report from The Sun, he basically, this reporter, just gives a rundown of everything that's been happening in the royal family in the last couple of years. Here's clip three.
So you just have to think about everything this woman, who's very, very close to turning 94, has gone through. This time last year, Prince Philip involved in that terrible car accident, injured two members of the public, very lucky to survive himself. He's since been sick. You then have the Jeffrey Epstein scandal, which has engulfed Prince Andrew, her favourite son, and seen him had to leave the royal family, or at least step down as a senior working member of the royal family. That, of course, was followed by Megxit, which has seen Harry and Meghan leave the family and step back as senior royals to go to Canada. In the midst of this civil war, that's how I've described it, between Prince Charles, Prince William, Prince Harry, Meghan and Kate. So probably right now, I think it's fair to say the Queen sees her family disintegrating around her. The royal family can definitely survive all these shocks. But you do have to think that it's significantly weakened right now. And obviously, given the Queen's age and Prince Philip's ill health, you do worry about what happens next, what happens when the Queen needs or wants to step back. And that's where what's going on with the young royals is particularly damaging.
You see that video and you immediately think of what my father wrote in the New Throne of David book, where he talked about the new revelation from January of 2017 and how that it was a signal of things to come for our nations and for the royal family here in the UK, a signal of the rapid decline in Britain's royal family. That's what he writes there in the New Throne of David book. We also had the article in 2017 about the fall of the British royal family as well. So I'd encourage you, I know we've referred to those before, because it seems like the news about the royal family, the bad news that is just been rapid fire every couple weeks. In this case, every week, two divorces just in the past week. Well, as a follow-up to yesterday's show, we talked about America's two-tiered justice system. You can get to that podcast at thetrumpet.com website or the YouTube stream as well. You can have these shows downloaded to your smart device. But the two tiers, as we brought out yesterday, you have these individuals that are in any way related to Donald Trump, even if the process crime had nothing to do with the investigation itself. Still, you have Trump associates on their way to prison or about to be sentenced. And yet, you have in the FBI people that are able to repeatedly lie, even under oath. As I was saying on yesterday's program, the FBI simply will not tolerate lying unless it comes from one of their own. Then, as we now know, it's they're quite tolerant of lies and deceit. As long as it's coming from Andy McCabe or Jim Comey or whoever. George Papadopoulos, he's one of the victims. Talking about Andy McCabe playing the victim card over the weekend. We played those clips for you yesterday of Mr. McCabe, who wants for us to believe that he's somehow a victim. Here's George Papadopoulos setting the record straight on that. Clip one.
Andy McCabe was referred for prosecution by the IG, the unbiased, nonpartisan IG, Horowitz. The way the mainstream media is championing Andy McCabe as a paragon of some sort of patriotism, it really feeds the perception today of a two-tier justice system in this country. It actually should send shivers down all American spines, because this does not happen in a constitutional republic. There's a tremendous and a grave danger to the fair application of the law in this country when you do see people like Andy McCabe, who has this FBI card, this get-out-of-free-jail card, while other people like myself, Roger Stone, Paul Manafort, General Flynn, basically have everything in the kitchen sink thrown at them. Bankrupted, having their doors knocked down at 6 in the morning, arrested at airports, thrown in solitary confinement, and the mainstream media props up people like Andy McCabe, who were actually referred for prosecution, but they were not. It's absurd.
That's George Papadopoulos talking about the two-tiered system of justice right now in the United States, one for conservatives or people connected to Donald Trump, the president, and then, of course, one for the deep state, which is much, much, much more lenient, at least for now. Now, as we pointed out yesterday, the reason for this full frontal attack on the Attorney General, Bill Barr, it may well be because the radical left knows that it's time is short. It's time of going on and on with these crimes without having to pay any kind of a penalty. There's quite a few investigations still ongoing. And as I say, judging by the way they're going after this AG and the president, it may well indicate that they know indictments are coming. At Fox News yesterday, you had a rundown basically of the different investigations. As we covered yesterday, Friday, there's the case against the former National Security Advisor Mike Flynn, how that Attorney General Barr reopened that, or at least had an outside investigator come in to look into that case yet again. There's also, according to this Fox News report, there's investigations revolving around Ukraine. It says here, Barr last week confirmed that the Justice Department is reviewing information about Ukraine coming from President Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, and others. And it says here that he's tapped another prosecutor from Pennsylvania to look into this. And of course, this has the left's, it has the left fuming. Why he would take any information from Rudy Giuliani, the president's lawyer that is supposed to be a crazy crackpot, if you listen to the radical left. Then there's the Durham probe into the origins of the Russia investigation, Crossfire Hurricane, that we've talked about a fair bit over the last year or so. John Durham, who probably won't complete his investigation for another few months, but still, from all that we can tell, the travels that he's been right around the world, talking to foreign governments. He's obviously interviewed quite a few people, and so we'll see what comes up from that. The Clinton Foundation and its connection with Uranium One. This says, in November 2017, then-Attorney General Jeff Sessions directed U.S. Attorney for Utah, John Huber, and other senior prosecutors to evaluate certain issues involving the sale of Uranium One. So that goes back to the days of Obama. And then, of course, there's the FISA warrant investigation as well. And we already know, because of the IG report from a few months ago, that they basically lied to the FISA court to get those search warrants. So you heard there from George Papadopoulos. Here now is the former Attorney General Matt Whitaker, also talking about this two-tiered system of justice at present in the United States. Clip two.
There's a problem where the American people are going to look at these examples, and there's other examples of General Flynn and George Papadopoulos as well, where it does look like there's a two-tiered system of justice. And in Andy McCabe's case, the IG's report lays out the factual basis for a case. He was referred for criminal charges by the Inspector General to the District of Columbia's U.S. Attorney. And I've sat in the chair as both as acting Attorney General and as a U.S. Attorney, and I know how hard it is to bring cases and to charge people. And so I can understand, I trust Bill Barr, that these difficult decisions are being well considered and being made for the right reasons. But at the same time, it is very difficult, based on what I know and what I've read in that Inspector General's report, as to why Andy McCabe hasn't been charged. And I'm hearing that everywhere I go right now from ordinary Americans. It does not make sense.
Ordinary Americans, he refers to there as ones that just can't understand why they would be so picky, the Mueller people, in going after Papadopoulos and Flynn and Stone and Manafort, and yet give Andy McCabe a get-out-of-jail-free card. Well, but there's still these other investigations going on, and probably the best indication for us, students of Bible prophecy, that there will be some indictments down the road, is just the fact that we're in the midst of this this temporary resurgence, 2 Kings 14 and verse 25, where it says, he restored the coast of Israel. So the borders were expanding for Israel, power, influence, and so on. In fact, under the days of Jeroboam II, Israel was more powerful than at any time since the days of Solomon. Now, it also says in that same passage that Israel was still in a sinful state. They were still in rebellion against the throne of David, but God had mercy upon them. It says in verse 27, and the Eternal said not that he would blot out the name of Israel from under heaven. So because of God's tremendous mercy, he intervened to spare our nations, even when we didn't deserve it. He intervened to give us one more age of prosperity before Assyrian conquest. And we're seeing that, this temporary resurgence, this temporary age of prosperity. Yesterday, by the way, Barack Obama wanted to take credit for the economic resurgence of late. He tweeted out, 11 years ago today, near the bottom of the worst recession in generations, I signed the Recovery Act, paving the way for more than a decade of economic growth and the longest streak of job creation in American history. And of course, the Trump administration was very quick to respond to that, to remind him of a little bit of history, as were a lot of other conservative sites. PJ Media said the bill, speaking of the Recovery Act, signed 11 years ago, it recovered nothing but big perks for Obama's political friends. He may not remember, but the internet does, and it's not being kind about it. So quite a reaction to Barack Obama, and Joe Biden has done the same thing. They're out there taking credit for this economic resurgence, here again, is a commentator on Fox setting the record straight, clip four.
We are seeing an acceleration of the American economy because of President Trump. You mentioned it. We're talking record low unemployment for large demographics and for the entire country. We are talking about rising wages and for those in the lower quartile, rising at even faster rates in generations. That's not because of President Obama. That's because of President Trump.
That's a commentator yesterday on Fox News talking about the economic resurgence. My father, in that article from the recent Trumpet, by the way, he says because of the progress he is making, speaking of the Trump administration, many people believe that the danger is past and the nation is heading in a new direction. He says, but sadly, this will not change the country's direction. The only thing that would do that is repentance before God. And that's not happening. That's not happening. Even though in the United States, we're hearing a lot about God. There is a lot of religious activity associated with this particular administration, with this White House. And of course, that too springs from Bible prophecy. Amos 7 talks about the King's Chapel. Amos 7 talks about this alliance between a Jeroboam administration and a priest, a minister. Joel Hilliker, who is the managing editor of The Trumpet, he sent me this Vox video, which talks about how, in Vox's view, how Bible prophecy shapes the foreign policy of the Trump administration. And just listen to a few tidbits from this short video put out by Vox. This is clip five.
For evangelicals, the most important of the Bible's prophecies is the second coming, when Jesus will return to earth. The Bible doesn't say when this will happen, but it does say where.
This is Jerusalem. World history as we know it is going to end right here.
Greg Laurie is an evangelical preacher, one of several who meet regularly to advise President Trump. They are the leaders of megachurches with tens of thousands of members. And many of them, including Greg Laurie, preach a belief called Christian Zionism, the idea that the return of the Jewish people to Israel is one of a series of events that will trigger Jesus' second coming.
Jesus is telling us that the rebirth of Israel is a sign of the end, not just a sign, it's the super sign.
So it's interesting here to see what these evangelicals believe with respect to the return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel. This Christian Zionism, as it's called there in that video clip. Now, we obviously know many prophecies point to the return of Jesus Christ to this earth, but what happens before that return? This is where they get it mixed up, because they see this return to Israel as something that happens before the return of Christ. Now, I'll read to you what some of the prophecies say regarding Jerusalem and the land of Judah, and what's prophesied to happen there before Jesus Christ sets foot on the Mount of Olives. But suffice it to say that this Jewish return, this return of the Jewish people, that's what happens after the return of Christ. I'll just quickly read Jeremiah 23, 5 and 6. It says, "Behold, the days come, says the Eternal, that I will raise unto David a righteous branch, and a king shall reign and prosper and shall execute judgment and justice in the earth." In his days, it says, this is when the king is ruling, capital K, "Judah shall be saved and Israel shall dwell safely." Judah and Israel regathered into the land of Israel, or the land of Judah. It says, "And this is his name, whereby he shall be called the Lord our righteousness." And so Judah will be saved, and Israel will dwell safely. And we know and understand that to mean Ephraim and Manasseh. And of course, these evangelicals, they don't understand the identity of our nations. They understand that little Judah is part of Israel, but look into the history, it was just a small part. And those two tribes broke away from the Israelite tribes. And that revolved around the throne of David, of course. Jeroboam led the rebellion against that throne. He led those northern tribes away from David's throne. So that's just some history from the Old Testament. Judah will be saved. Israel will, they will dwell safely. God will again intervene to save our people following the return of Jesus Christ. So this second Exodus, if you call it that, that's what it's referred to as in the old literature from Herbert Armstrong's days. It takes place after our people, and this is crucial, this point. It happens after our people have been scattered as captives among the Gentiles. It takes place after the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. After that empire turns on our nations, especially the United States and Britain. Now, coming back to this Vox video and this alliance between the Trump administration and the evangelicals, here's what it went on to say, clip six.
According to this theology, God will reward those who help Israel and punish those who don't.
Jesus will be on his throne and he separates the nations. On what basis? How they treated Zion. Yeah.
According to Christian Zionism, if the U.S. wants to be on the right side of biblical prophecy, they need to do everything possible to protect Israel and punish Iran.
That's interesting the way that it's expressed there. If they want to be on the right side of biblical prophecy, then they need to support Israel and resist against Iran. Now, with respect to the prophecies, what does the Bible say regarding this particular area of the world? We've referred to Jerusalem as like a powder keg that's just going to set off worldwide conflagration. But think about Hosea 5 and verse 5. It says, the pride of Israel does testify to its face. Therefore shall Israel and Ephraim, Israel being Manasseh, Ephraim fall in their iniquity, and Judah also shall fall with them. All three fall together. All three fall suddenly. Now, with respect to Jerusalem, think about what Jesus said in Matthew 24. Verse 15, it says, when you therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, so it's in the Old Testament and the New, it says, stand in the holy place. Whoso reads, let him understand. If you read and study these prophecies, you can understand and know what's prophesied for Jerusalem and beyond. You put Matthew 24, 15 together with Luke 21 and verse 20, and we know that it's armies. When the armies compass Jerusalem, then know that the desolation is near. So this abomination of desolation, it's brought on by armies from the Holy Roman Empire. And God says, when you see the armies surround Jerusalem, you better head for the hills. That's what's prophesied. Verse 16 in Matthew 24, it says, then let them which are in Judea flee to the mountains, and let them which are in the midst of it depart out. God wants us to be ready to run once we see the abomination. It's repentance towards God that puts us, if you want to use the same language that they used in that video, it's repentance toward God that puts us on the right side of Bible prophecy, not a foreign policy that is favorable toward Israel. Now, in that recent Trumpet magazine, my father says, because of the progress that he's making, many people believe that the danger is past and the nation's heading in a new direction. You really do see that, don't you? People that on the side of this president think that the danger is past. There's nothing more to worry about except for the radical left. And I tell you, if the indictments start rolling out, this is like a complete and total victory for the conservative right. But coming back to this Vox video, let me just switch over to a program. This is from the middle of January, I believe. It's on the Trinity Broadcasting Network. Just to give you a little bit of an idea of, again, what some of these broadcasters on TBN think about a foreign policy that supports Israel. Israel today, the little nation of Israel today. This is clip 8.
The biblical narrative says that God's plan for this land would be that it would be given to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob's descendants forever. Countries that are trying to change that narrative are not fighting against you, Mr. Prime Minister. They're fighting against God himself. That's what we believe. That's why we're always in support of Israel.
Amazing things are happening here in Israel. You're seeing the Bible and all the prophetic word come to pass, you know, and you know, God will protect this country no matter what. And that's going to be exciting. That's exciting for me to think about, that no matter what happens, God's hand, this is God's country.
And God will protect that country no matter what, she said. No matter what happens in Jerusalem, in Tel Aviv, in our nations today. You see how they're misreading the prophecies of coming calamities and destruction and captivity because of sin. Now, you've got a lot, as I don't have time to get into this Politico piece about, again, how strong this alliance is between President Trump and the evangelical community. Maybe I can touch on it a little bit more later this week. But just to finish off with this Vox video, how Bible prophecy shapes President Trump's foreign policy. Here's clip 7.
Could it be that President Trump right now has been sort of raised for such a time as this, just like Queen Esther, to help save the Jewish people from an Iranian menace?
As a Christian, I certainly believe that's possible. I'm confident that the Lord is at work here.
That's Secretary of State Mike Pompeo answering that interviewer from TBN. Now, again, you think about what we've referred to quite often in the last couple of years, that 1978 Plain Truth article talking about the long and peaceful reign of Jeroboam II, and how that during that, Israel was lulled into a false sense of security because the national borders were expanding. The country experienced another time of opulence and prosperity. And then, as it says in that Plain Truth piece, religious activity and ceremony was at a peak. And the people had come to believe that God was benignly smiling down upon them. They've come to believe that the Lord is at work here. As my father said in the March 2020 trumpet, the resurgence in America is causing some people to grow complacent, and that's a grave mistake. Well, switching back to that 78 article, it's in this time period, this time of opulence and prosperity and all of this religious activity, into this scene steps the prophet Amos. God's work, God's warning message. That's what this world needs. That's what this administration needs. That's what our nations need. That's what the world of religion needs as well. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with the latest television program for here in the UK, Brace for Change in Europe. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Jerusalem. The name means City of Peace, and yet no city has had a history filled with more war and bloodshed. No city has suffered like Jerusalem. It has been the focal point of religious wars throughout the centuries. Jerusalem plays a central role in the beliefs of three major religions, Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. To the Arabs and Jews, Jerusalem is a national symbol. While both sides have attempted to form peace treaties, Jerusalem continually remains the center of dispute. Why all this conflict surrounding Jerusalem? Will the Israeli-Palestinian peace process put an end to the chaos? Will there ever be peace in Jerusalem? The Holy Bible provides the answers concerning the future of this great city. Your Bible states that the tensions revolving around Jerusalem are only going to worsen before they get better. This city will be engaged in some of the worst violence ever to occur in the history of man. But there is great hope for Jerusalem. At the conclusion of these painful events, Jerusalem will experience glory and magnificence as no city ever has, and there will finally be peace in Jerusalem. To understand the important role Jerusalem will play in future events, visit our literature library on thetrumpet.com and request our free booklet, Jerusalem in Prophecy.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Prophetically significant events in Europe are developing quickly. Herbert W. Armstrong forecast that the prophesied European empire mentioned in the books of Daniel and Revelation would emerge suddenly on the world scene. It will startle the world, he said. Recent political events indicate that this sudden emergence is about to take place. Are you watching what's happening in Europe?
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the program. There's a leadership vacuum right now in Germany, and if you're a student of Bible prophecy, well, that should get your attention. Angela Merkel has been in power for 15 years, and a while back she made it known that she's not going to be standing in for another election. So she's on the way out. That could happen pretty soon, I think officially next year sometime. But then you look at her hand-picked successor, the leader of the CDU party, Angela Merkel's party. This is a woman by the name of Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer. And she stepped down just recently. And this followed a political scandal in the German state of Thuringia, where they had recent elections, and the CDU party, Angela Merkel's party, joined forces with the far-right party, the Alternative for Deutschland party, in order to build an alliance so that they could then handpick the leader of that particular state. This was the first time in a lifetime that the far-right in Germany has played a significant role in government. And if you go back a good ways in history, well, really not that long ago, Thuringia is also where the Nazis first came to power in the 1930s. Let me just take you to a couple of quotes. These are commentators talking about what happened in those German state elections in Thuringia when the CDU and the AfD party came together. They joined forces. This was from the Times of London. It says here, the taboo that has kept the far right out of German government for 75 years was broken on February 5th when ultra-nationalists emerged for the first time as the kingmakers in a regional parliament. The AfD party, the far right party, emerged as the first, for the first time to be the kingmaker in Thuringia. This is from Deutsche Welle. They said, a state premier has been elected to office with direct support from the far-right nationalist AfD. The utter breach of taboo shows just how weak opposition to the rise of the right in Germany really is. Now, that's quite a statement. That's coming from a German publication. This really did shock many people in politics, in the media there in Germany, this hand-picked leader in Thuringia, Thomas Kemmerich was his name. There was such an outcry following his victory on February 5th that he stepped down within 24 hours. And then, of course, Angela Merkel was taking quite a lot of criticism. It was her party, after all, that came together with the AfD. And then, as I mentioned, the woman in charge of the CDU party, or she presides over the CDU, then she announced that she was going to step down. So just a lot of political instability and turmoil going on right now in Germany. We produced a program just last week. Have you been watching world events? We focused in that program on the world at large, all of these events around the world, just since the beginning of this year. But today we're going to focus more specifically on Germany. Germany really is leaderless as it heads into a lot of stormy conditions in Europe, even outside of Europe. This is obviously the scandal. It's had an impact on German politics, but it's also impacting Europe as well. There was a recent EU Observer headline, German domestic turmoil prolongs EU leadership gap. They have a rotating presidency over the EU. Germany's up to take that position in the second half of this year. And so now what does it mean for Europe? As Germany, as many commentators are saying, Germany needs to turn inward and try to figure out its own leadership needs. And meanwhile, Europe is going to be looking for strong leadership as well. The Observer says that this will mean that Germany will continue to look inwards and be unable to provide the leadership many in the EU hope it could bring. Judy Dempsey, she's a senior fellow at the Carnegie Institute in Europe, and she said the glaring leadership gap in Germany comes at a time when the EU needs strong leaders to deal with the plethora of problems, not least the immense strains in the transatlantic relationship and the growing global role of China. It says, in a bid to buy time before next year's federal election, the CDU wants to spend the coming months finding a new leader, leaving in the ensuing period a vacuum in Europe. Now, this comes at a time when there are all of these strongmen rising around the world, in Russia, in China, even in certain European nations, throughout the Middle East, obviously. And so what does it mean when there's, even as you see all of this going on around Europe, what does it mean for Europe itself? When there's this dearth of leadership, and so many of the citizens of Europe, so many of the people of Europe, they're crying out for a strong leader. They want a strong leader, in a lot of ways, to compete with some of the other leaders that they now see emerging. So many would welcome this as a positive development in Germany and in Europe. The Berlin Policy Journal recently said, brace for change in Germany. And right now you have this kind of strange mixture of stability on the one hand and yet turmoil on the other. There's lots of problems, as I say, that Germany and Europe are having to deal with, but there's also, in Germany itself, there's low unemployment, there's low government debt, there's a strong manufacturing base. So there are some positives there, but there are also some pretty big problems looming on the horizon. And this is why so many in Germany and so many in Europe, this is why they want a strong man, a strong leader. Let me just quote to you from that Berlin Policy Journal piece. It says, whoever it will be, whenever it happens, the new CDU leader's job is not going to be easy. After nearly two decades of Merkel's centrist policy, the party is torn between continuing along her line or moving back to the right. And if Thuringia is any indication, this is the CDU drifting hard to the right with a party that, well, ever since it came into being, the AfD has only been around since 2013, 7 years, but ever since it came into being, the main parties in Germany have just shunned the AfD. They haven't worked with the AfD at all. It's too extreme. It's too far right. Well, as I read to you, that taboo was broken just this month in that German state of Thuringia. Well, after Merkel Which way is the party going to go? The CDU, that is. It says there is no consensus either about how to deal with the AfD's success, particularly in Eastern Germany. One thing at least is clear, whether it takes 18 months or less for Angela Merkel and the stable state she has come to represent, the countdown has begun. Brace for change in Germany and in Europe. Brace for it. Now, as I said, if you're a student of Bible prophecy, you know how significant these coming changes will be. We've got to brace ourselves for dramatic changes. Now, there's sure to be some different politicians angling for Angela Merkel's position and this other lady that stepped down as the head of the CDU. One name that has been in the news is Friedrich Merz. He's in the CDU party and would like to replace Ms. Merkel. And he has strong support from another German politician, or one that used to be in politics, Karl Theodor zu Guttenberg. And he's someone, if you've read the Trumpet magazine, you see here just in the January issue earlier this year, he was on the front page or the cover of our magazine. This is an individual that we follow or have followed closely. But Gutenberg said, for me, there's no one who I think fits the role perfectly, quite like Friedrich Merz. And so Gutenberg supports this politician, Merz. This is from Foreign Policy. It says, Friedrich Merz would tack hard to the right, pushing the CDU toward the AfD. Think about this. He's going to tack hard to the right, says Foreign Policy, and bring the CDU closer to the AfD. Now, that's what just caused the outcry. The AfD and the CDU came together in Thuringia, and a lot of people exploded with anger. How could this happen? How could this taboo be shattered? It just happened, and here's Foreign Policy saying about Friedrich Merz that he would take it even further to the right, the CDU, closer to the AfD. And of course, the reason why that's so tempting to do is because the AfD is increasing in popularity. You can see that from every election that we have in Germany. It says, in an attempt to recapture voters that have fled to the populist right in past elections, Merz has been advocating radically restricted immigration policies, and he is regularly in the headlines for his critical stance toward Merkel's leadership. And now Gutenberg also has been quite critical of late of Angela Merkel. These are leaders very close to Merkel, tied to her party, that have criticized her for not being strong enough. The people are crying out for stronger leadership. There's troubles within. There's increasing pressures from without. The refugee crisis, it continues. Many spilling into Europe from Syria and other places. So as I say, it's this mixture of stability and uncertainty and trouble and difficulty as well. Let me take you to Jeremiah chapter 1, and we'll just read a couple of verses here before we break. This is Jeremiah 1, talking about what will happen eventually in the heart of Europe. It's boiling right now, and it's about to spill over the pot, so to speak. Verse 13, it says, and the word of the Eternal came unto me the second time, saying, what see you, Jeremiah? What do you see? And he said, I see a seething pot, and the face thereof is toward the north. And so here is pictured a boiling pot that's about to spill over on the nations of Israel. These troubles, or this tension, this violence, this trial, it's something that's going to touch our nations as well. It's about to break forth. Verse 14 says, then the Eternal said unto me, out of the north an evil shall break forth upon all the inhabitants of the land. This is north of Jerusalem. That's the center point. And north of that, or a little bit north and west of it, is this beast power, as it's prophesied in the book of Revelation. It's to come out of the heart of Europe, and like a boiling pot, It's about to spill over the edges and, as I say, impact all of our nations. This is the literature that we'd like for you to request today. You can call our operators right now, the Holy Roman Empire, in prophecy. We've been anticipating the seventh and final resurrection of this empire, this prophesied empire, for many decades now. Herbert Armstrong going back to his ministry and carrying right on with this work. We have the Holy Roman Empire in prophecy. I've mentioned the Trumpet magazine, which you ought to subscribe to. Trumpet subscribers are given invites to our public appearance campaigns all over the UK. So make sure that you subscribe to that today as well. And then this too, a little booklet, A Strong German Leader is Imminent. Call our operators now and request your free material. We'll be right back. In 1928, the Nazi Party came in ninth in a general election. They took in a little more than 2% of the electorate. So it was just a tiny little party then. But just a couple years later, it took in 18.3% of the vote. So it was gaining in popularity and it was happening fast. And I think you can see some correlations today with the AfD party starting out in 2013, just taking in a couple of percentage points in general elections. And then now in some of these states, they're the second biggest party. And when you go back to the late 1920s and early 1930s, it was just gridlock. They struggled to get a majority coalition because of all of these fracturous groups in politics. But as the Nazi Party gained in popularity, well, then some of these other mainstream parties, they had to work with them. And that's something that we've seen even here recently. Now, let's look at the prophecies in Daniel 8, about a strong leader to come out of the heart of Europe. You see this, as I said in the program recently, you see this happening all over the world. So we should expect for it to happen in Germany too, if nothing else, just in competition with other nations. But then you add to that history and prophecy, as we'll discuss here right now, Daniel 8 in verse 23, it says, "And in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors are come to the full, the king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up." Now this is talking about a coming leader. He's coming out of the heart of Germany. And when you put this together with other prophecies, even right here in Daniel, Daniel 11 talks about the king of the north rising at the time of the end. And we talked about that northern direction, that northwestern direction from Jerusalem in the first segment. So the king of the north, that's Daniel 11. And then it says here in chapter 8 that king of fierce countenance, he's going to understand dark sentences. He's going to stand up. A powerful king to lead this northern conglomerate, this combine of nations, 10 kings, 10 kingdoms, as it says in Revelation 17. We'll just flip over to Daniel 11 here. Daniel 11 and verse 21, it says, "And in his estate shall stand up a vile person to whom they shall not give the honor of the kingdom, but he shall come in peaceably and obtain the kingdom by flatteries." So it's not someone who's voted in, but he comes in and he obtains the kingdom by flatteries. He's a smooth talker. He's a charismatic leader, but a king of fierce countenance as well. This is from our January Trumpet magazine. It says, "This prophesied leader may well exploit this frustration and confusion by rallying a coalition behind him and vaunting himself to power. This would take a lot of intelligence and calculation. It would require unusual skill to deceive people in high places with flattery, but the prophesied Daniel 8 man will do it magnificently." Yes, he's prophesied to do it. You wait for it. Watch for it. Jesus said to watch and pray when we see these events happen. Then you'll know. You'll know just how close we are to the return of Jesus Christ. This is from my father's Key of David program in the States just last year, about a strong man rising in Europe.
Germany dominates Europe today. Everybody knows that. They are the powerhouse in Europe, and they're gaining more and more power. And this man that I'm talking about is rising on the world scene and certainly has a lot of understanding of politics and is a brilliant man in so many ways. But there is a hidden power in Europe, and that all revolves around Germany, and soon they're going to lead 10 kingdoms. 10 kingdoms on this earth to do some very devastating things.
Now that's in Bible prophecy, Revelation 13 and 17, and also Daniel 2 and Daniel 7. We're talking about the strong man, the leader, here in Daniel 8, Daniel 11. Let's just take you through a few verses in Isaiah chapter 10. This is Isaiah 10. And verse 5, it says, O Assyrian, the rod of my anger and the staff in their hand is my indignation. So here is God talking about the Assyrian rod. He uses an Assyrian people to, a rod is a corrective device. And so God's going to use this corrective instrument to correct our nations, to teach our nations. Verse 6, it says, And I will send him, this Assyrian rod, against an hypocritical nation, and against the people of my wrath will I give him a charge to take the spoil and to take the prey and to tread them down like the mire of the streets. And so God sends this rod of anger against a hypocritical nation, more than one actually, the nations of Israel. This is what it takes to turn the modern day Israelite people, to turn them back to God. Now, this is, as I've pointed out on recent programs, this is another reason why Herbert Armstrong always knew that this union between the European nations and Britain, that it would never work. Because Britain is prophesied to be on the receiving end of this corrective rod. So Herbert Armstrong knew that Britain would not be in that European Union. And now that's been fulfilled. That's already happened. And so we can look for events in Europe, even now that Britain's out, even now that Brexit has happened, you can expect events in the heart of Europe to accelerate and quickly. Here Brexit happens, and then the next week, practically, you have this political crisis, this scandal in Thuringia, and a lot of people in Germany just up in arms, as they should be. Here was a party that had been shunned ever since it came into being. And now you have the leading party in German politics reaching out to, joining forces with, that far-right party that happened just recently. To finish here in Isaiah, verse 7, it says, Howbeit, he means not so, neither does his heart think so, but it is in his heart to destroy and cut off nations, not a few. He comes in with good intentions, it would seem. As I said earlier, a real smooth talker, very charismatic. But then, like Habakkuk 1 in verse 11 says, there's a mind change. And then when you think about the real spirit world, Satan and his demons have been cast down, Revelation 12. And so we're about to see a lot of things explode on the world scene. Listen to Mr. Armstrong. These are all prophecies that he talked about 50, 60, 70 years ago. And we've just continued on with that same work. Mr. Armstrong went right around the world to millions and millions of people. Many of you are familiar with what he said so many years ago. Here's one example from the 1960s.
Gradually and now faster and faster, a new power is being developed from underneath the surface. A new world power, which the public now least suspects, which the world does not yet see, doesn't realize, doesn't dream is coming, but it is developing just as prophesied in Europe, a resurrected Roman Empire that will combine some 350 millions of population, a power so mighty that our Western peoples will stand aghast when it flashes suddenly into full being. Yes, your Bible says that the world will be startled.
That's Herbert Armstrong from the 1960s. The whole world will be startled. And the reason for that is because they weren't watching and praying. They weren't watching world events. as they relate to Bible prophecy. They weren't students of Bible prophecy, and so they're going to be caught unawares. They're going to be completely surprised and shocked by these developments. Well, you don't have to be. You can know what's prophesied in your Bible. And look, these events, these prophesied events, they're unfolding step by step by step. And some of the changes that we're still anticipating, the dramatic changes, they're going to happen quickly, overnight. That's what my father wrote about in this January issue of The Trumpet. Could this be, as it says here, is this his hour? Is this his time? Will we see this Daniel 8 leader come to the forefront here in this calendar year or soon in the coming months? Well, we have some literature, as I say, that you definitely need to request if you don't have copies already. A strong German leader is imminent. That's what your Bible says, Bible prophecy. And then for the bigger picture of it all, the Holy Roman Empire, this booklet, it's actually a book, 200-page book, The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy, read about the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire, prophesied to come out of the heart of Europe one more time. Well, that's all that we have time for today. We'll look forward to seeing you again next time.